So we're doing Ein Yaakov, we're in Tractate Shabbat, and we were in the middle of a broad topic, the idea of tradition and how the written law cannot be understood without tradition, and the many different verses which would be totally misunderstood if you didn't have tradition. We discussed the commandment, stay in your spot on Shabbat. You have no tradition, it means stay seated all Shabbat, don't go anywhere. That's what it says. We discussed putting tefillin between your eyes. If I don't have tradition, I should wear tefillin, like, right here. We discussed an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, which we don't do. Our tradition is not to do that. We discussed that, in essence, you cannot understand Torah without tradition. Torah says put an ornament on your head between your eyes. No one would think to put tefillin, black, four houses, etc., the way we do if you didn't have tradition. It's all tradition. So there is no understanding of Torah without tradition. You could have a totally botched up, immoral society if you try to do Torah without tradition. Torah says burn, so maybe you should put a stack of wood and burn the person, right? We have a tradition about how a person has to be warned. We have a tradition about how you cannot administer a death penalty unless the person was warned directly prior to doing the transgression, and they were told what the punishment would be, and the witnesses were there to hear the warning, and the person said, I'm going to do it anyways, etc. There's a whole system. It's all tradition. And so here, although the Navi describes the two sons of Eli sleeping with the women who brought sacrifices to the temple, our tradition is that they didn't intimately sleep with them, but rather because they were taking care of themselves, the women had to spend the night by the temple, and they would go to sleep there, and then they were effectively sleeping with the women being present and also sleeping at the temple grounds, which was not so nice. It's not nice that the women have to sleep at the temple. But even though the verse seems to say they were intimately sleeping with the women, our tradition is that that's not what went on there. And the verse purposely worded it in a way that could be misunderstood because the verse wanted them to have a bad rap. The verse purposely worded it in a very harsh way because in heaven it was considered like what they did was as bad as doing that. That's adultery. That's Yehareg Val Yavor. A person would have to give up their life rather than do that. And yet the verse words it that way. So now we're coming back to the Gemara. Guf amar Pinchas lo chata, amarav Pinchas lo chata. Rav says, it's not true that they both didn't transgress. One of them didn't. There were two brothers, Hofni and Pinchas. Pinchas did not sin. The verse describes a Kohen as being a descendant of Pinchas. So why would the Navi, 10 chapters later, describe the Kohen, Achiyah, as a descendant of Pinchas? If the Navi was coming to tell you, this Kohen was a very honorable person, you don't say his great-grandfather was the mass rapist. You don't do that. You're coming to tell me he's a great person, so you don't tell me, and his grandfather was Pinchas. If Pinchas was what the verse seems to say he was, a massive adulterer, then 10 chapters later, you don't honor the Kohen by telling us his great-grandfather was that Pinchas. The verse says, when a person does such transgressions, Hashem cuts him off. We don't mention him again. We want him to be forgotten in history. And part of the curse to someone who commits adultery is that they won't have a descendant who serves in the temple. From here, the Gemara proves that of the two brothers, Pinchas was not doing it. The pasuk describes it as though they were both sleeping with the women. Rav says, no, it wasn't both of them. Pinchas did not, because you see later on, he is referenced in this way. So the Gemara asks, but it does say they used to sleep with the women. They slept. The Talmud says, no. If you look closely, it says yishkevan. There's no vav there. So yishkevan means singular sense. He slept. It doesn't have to mean they slept. V'aktiv al banai ki lo tova shmua. But when Eli chastises his sons, he says, it's wrong, my sons. Plural. What I hear people talking about you is not nice. Amar Nachum bar Yitzchak, b'ni k'tiv. Rabbi Nachum bar Yitzchak says, no. The way the word is written, it can be read as banai, multiple, plural, or b'ni, my son, singular. There's another line here which Rashi says doesn't belong in the Talmud here, so we're skipping it. V'aktiv b'nei Eli b'nei v'lian. But the verse says the sons of Eli were both children who did not have the yoke of heaven. Answers the Gemara, mitoch she'alo lePinchas limchot bechofni v'lo micha, male alav aktuv kilu chata. Pinchas was his brother. They were partners in running the temple. So even though Pinchas effectively did not do anything, but Pinchas could have told his brother, stop it! You can't behave this way. And he didn't. And that's why when the Torah says they both behaved improperly, the Torah attributes the same transgression to Pinchas. Pinchas didn't do it. But as we saw in the earlier pages of this Gemara, the Torah says sometimes you are the one who has the capacity to make someone change. There are times in life when you're the only one who could say no. And guys, this applies to you also. Don't think it's always the rabbi's job to say no. Sometimes if someone stands from the crowd and says this is wrong, there's a story in the days, I think it was the Chassam Sofer, where the president of his shul kept pushing the shul towards Reform Judaism. So I'm pretty sure it was the Chassam Sofer, but maybe I got it wrong. One Shabbos, they put the choir up on the balcony. And the goal was to develop a choir the way the Reformed temples had them. And the Chassam Sofer was already an old man. So he comes to shul and he sees the choir up on the balcony. So he goes up and he tells them, gentlemen, I want you down the way where everyone is praying, the way you were. So they go down. The presidents of the shul, those who were the financiers of the shul, their intention was to have them up there. So after they came down, they walked up to the people of the choir and they said, go back up, we're paying your salaries, we want you on the balcony. The rabbi said, yeah, but we told you to go up. They went back up. The Chassam Sofer sees them up there, he stops his prayer, he goes back up to the balcony and he says, I want you down. So they go back down to their seats. The presidents get up, they go to the choir and they say, we told you we want you up there, get back up there. They start going up and suddenly from the women's section, they see the Chassam Sofer getting up a third time to go up to the balcony. And one of the women yells down at her husband, the president, and says, have you no shame? You're going to make the rabbi go up another time? Stop it! And that's where it ended. A woman stopped it all. You know, so sometimes you have to realize it doesn't matter. It's not only the rabbi who has to do things. Sometimes on the contrary, if someone else speaks up, there was once a shul where a few women were pushing to have the mechitza be less modest. One of the women got up and looked at the other women and said, what are you coming to shul for anyways? You're coming to shul to make compromises? Aren't you coming to shul to make this a holy place? So what are you looking to compromise on the mechitza? If it's supposed to be holy, what's wrong with you? When a woman said it, it sounded differently than if the rabbi said it. So I'm saying sometimes you have to take that responsibility. You'll be parts of community. What the changes you can affect in the positive sense can sometimes be greater than the changes the rabbi can affect.